let me share a few quick stories about myself. I have a big scar here on my pinky. And when I look at my pinky, it's a scar that actually spans across my whole finger. And I'm reminded when I look at that scar of this story when I was trying to change some guitar strings. Now, if you know, you know. Guitar strings are very sharp, and I tried to change them, and I did it too quickly, and I just totally scraped my pinky. And whenever I look at my pinky, I'm reminded of that story. Every time I look in the mirror, I see another scar. I have a scar on my earlobe, and at one time, a friend of mine insisted on piercing my ear, and never mind the method she used, but let's just say it didn't heal very well. And so whenever I look in the mirror and I look at my ear, I'm reminded of that story. I also have another scar, and it's below my knee, and it reminds me of this other story when I was trying to hop a ditch. Okay, and the ditch there's a pretty big chasm, and I went, there was water down below, and I went to jump, thought it would be a great jump. It really wasn't. And I fell in the water below, and I scraped up my leg. But whenever I look at my leg, when I see that scar, I'm reminded of that story. Now, all of you probably have various scars on your body, and you might be reminded of stories as well. Noah has a big scar on his elbow from elbow surgery, right? Tommy John surgery. When was that? 2 years ago. Yeah. My friend Brady, where's Brady? Brady Sandez? Okay. Brady has a scar on the inside of his mouth from a 90 mile per hour fastball hit him in the face. And we actually do have a picture of his face after this happened. Yeah. Brady, I feel like I need to just let you tell this story. Do you guys want to hear this story really quick? Come on up, Brady. All right, Brady, I'm going to give you a minute. Tell the story really quick.
That's such a good photo. I love that photo. All right, well, I'll try to tell this story in a minute. I don't know if you guys know anything about baseball, but a person throws a ball at you and you have to hit it. And I kind of caught it with my face. And so basically, there's a ball thrown at me. It was like the last game of the season as a freshman. I'm like, yeah, I can make a difference. A lot of people ask me why I didn't get out of the way. I'm a team player, guys. Like, come on. I wanted to wear the pitch and I get to go to first base. In baseball, if you get hit by the pitch, you can go to first base. I got hit in the face. And so I got hit by the pitch. I tried to walk to first base. The umpire kind of looked at me and he was like, you got to get off the field. I was like, why? And he goes, you're bleeding everywhere. And so I looked down, I was bleeding all over my jersey. I was like, okay, well, fair enough. So I got off the field. I was upset naturally because my face was shattered and I put some ice on it I'll try to speed this up. But basically I was at the field for like 4 or 5 hours because I was just packing gauze in my cheek because I was bleeding and I didn't know why. And I ended up going to the hospital later. The nurse was checking inside my mouth and she was like, why are you chewing gum? Like, we have a broken jaw. Why are you chewing gum? I was like, oh, I'm not chewing gum. I've got gauze in there to stop the bleeding. And then she's like, oh, that makes sense. So she took the gauze out and she goes, oh, I could see why you're bleeding nonstop. I was like, oh, awesome. Why? She goes, oh, I could see your bone sticking through your cheek. So yeah, that's what I said too. And then they brought me to the back room. Side note, they OD'd me on fentanyl in the back room while I was in the nursing sting thing too, which that was fun. And I projectile vomited all over the wall. That was a good time. And then they told me I was supposed to have like an hour, 2 hour surgery just to screw my jaw back together. They had an x-ray. They're like, oh yeah, I can see that your jaw's already broken in like 7 places. So I'll just have to screw it all back together. I was like, awesome. Sounds good to me. I'm sure you know what you're doing. And then I got back out of surgery. Turned out the surgery was 7 hours long. And he's pulling bone fragments out of my neck for 7 hours. So what happened was the ball hit my jaw. It shattered my jaw fully in. It knocked all my lower teeth out of place, up and out. So you had to individually screw all my teeth back in. It severed all the blood vessels in my jaw and neck. And that's why I was bleeding into my neck. I had a bunch of nerve damage. So my face was kind of numb. And I still have some nerve damage in my lip. If the ball's coming out of your head, just move.
Okay, there we go. Let's give him a hand. Thank you. Yeah, that great details, nice and graphic. That's awesome. Okay, all right. So, we all have physical scars, right? Now, we also have scars that are unseen, right? We have emotional scars, right? I'm reminded, I have not been able to recover from when I was a senior, my senior year in high school, my soccer team, this was 15 years ago, my soccer team lost our semifinal soccer game, and I have not been able to recover from that. That's just an emotional scar for me. I also remember one time when I was young, really little, I remember getting humiliated and invalidated by a family friend. Emotional scar, right? I have a family member who struggles with addiction, and that's left serious emotional scars on me and my family. I also had a childhood friend who died in a car accident. Emotional scar. Now, I'm sure many of you have your own emotional scars as well. What am I getting at? I'm getting at, if you are a human, you have scars, right? Scars remind us that we, as humans, are vulnerable. We're finite. We're not unbreakable. We get hurt, right? And our scars tell stories, little stories like the event that happened. But our scars tell a bigger story, the story of the fact that as humans, we all have pain in life, right? Now, as I think of my walk with Jesus, something that strikes a very deep chord for me is this. It's the fact that Jesus has scars too. Jesus has scars too. And I just want you to think about that for a second. Almighty God of the universe having his own set of scars. Okay, now Melissa mentioned it earlier. Some of you might know this and some of you might not. That's fine. But God came down to earth in human form in the person of Jesus. And so that means that Jesus, as a human, went through the same thing that we vulnerable humans go through. So Jesus felt pain. Jesus bled. Jesus had an emotional life. Jesus was wounded. Jesus cried. And just as our scars tell us stories about ourselves, Jesus' scars tell a story about him too. What's the story? The story is this. Jesus has actually lived through the same pain that we have, which is crazy to think about and deeply impacts me in this particular season of my life. I think all of us might be wondering, can Jesus relate to me? Does Jesus understand the pain I go through? Does he get me? Does he understand what I go through on a day-to-day basis? Those are all good questions. And so this is what I want to do this morning. I want to tell all of us about the worst night of Jesus' life. And this is a night where Jesus picks up a lot of scars. Now, spoiler alert, it's the night where he dies. But I'm actually not going to tell so much about his death as I want to tell about all the events that happened that led up to his death. And on this night, Jesus experiences some of the worst realities that a human can actually experience, maybe some of the things that some of us have gone through. And on this night, like I said, he experiences horrible things. And my hope is that after this story, you and I can decide if we think Jesus can relate to us and the pain that we go through, okay? So let me tell this story. Context, pretty much, Jesus, he's been doing his thing for the last 3 years. He's been healing people, loving on people, teaching people, and he is such a controversial figure that religious leaders want him dead, okay? So they make Jesus makes them so angry that they are actually out looking for him, wanting to find him, arrest him, and then execute him. So they are out looking for him, all right? Now, we'll pick it up on the screen. This is John 18:1. Here's the start of our story. When Jesus had finished praying at dinner, he left with his disciples and they crossed the Kidron Valley. On the other side, there was a garden and he and his disciples went into it. Okay, so Jesus, he just had dinner with friends and now they're about to go spend the night in this garden. Now, while his friends are sleeping, Jesus goes off and prays. Now, Jesus knows tonight he is going to die. He just has this knowledge of this. So because Jesus knows this, he is overcome with emotional distress. He is wrecked, just totally undone. We read he has turmoil, anxiety, grief, stress. I just want you to imagine Jesus for a second, okay? He knows how horrible this night is gonna be for him. And we see his intense anxiety manifesting itself all throughout his body. Jesus can't walk. We read he falls on his face, he cries, and he sweats drops of blood. You guys, Jesus is having a panic attack. Jesus having a panic attack. He says, my soul is full of sorrow to the point of death. I have a question. Have you ever been here? Drowning in stress, anxiety, panic, grief, sorrow, deep, thick confusion and anguish. I want you to know Jesus understands. Jesus gets you. And he has sympathy for you when you're there. Let's keep going. After about an hour of this, what happens is eventually an entire army of soldiers comes to arrest Jesus in the garden. Wait, how did the soldiers know he was there? How did they find his location? Well, thanks to one of Jesus' friends, his disciple Judas, sells him out. We'll read this up on the screen. Now, Judas, who betrayed Jesus, knew the place where Jesus was because Jesus had often met there with his disciples. So Judas came to the garden, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. They were carrying torches, lanterns, and weapons. So Judas gives away Jesus' location, okay? Brings an army, totally betrays Jesus. Now, remember, Jesus had a handful of other friends who were with him. Now, do they stand by his side when he gets arrested? No. Okay, we read that they all run away. They dip on a night when Jesus was at his lowest and kind of needed them the most. They all abandon him. And then Peter, arguably Jesus's most loyal friend, we read that after Jesus gets arrested, he hangs back and he's kind of hanging back at a distance. And we read that he is questioned about if he's associated with Jesus, if they're friends, if he knows Jesus. And Peter denies knowing Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. So I have a question. How is Jesus' night going? Not good. Not good. Jesus, when he needs friends the most, at his lowest point in life, he is betrayed by one of his friends, abandoned by the rest of his friends, and then the one friend who said he would never deny or be ashamed of knowing Jesus does it three times. Scars for Jesus. Scars for Jesus. Have you been here? You trusted someone, they turned on you. Maybe you were betrayed by a friend, cheated on. Maybe you were rejected by the woman of your dreams, the man of your dreams, abandoned by a parent. Maybe your parents had a favorite kid and it was not you. Or maybe you've just felt lonely your entire life, like you've never had people there for you when you really needed them or needed their support. I want you to know Jesus understands. Jesus gets what that's like, and he has nothing but sympathy for you when you're here. Let's keep moving. What happens next for Jesus? Now, unfortunately, the night is young, and it's only getting worse. We read that after Jesus is arrested, he goes to trial, and tons of people falsely testify against him. So he is a victim of trials that are shams, okay? Trumped up charges, lies against him, false accusations, people falsely testifying against him. So the whole trial is a complete sham. Have you been here? Someone has slandered your name, spread false information about you, suspected you did things that you didn't do, maybe suspected things about your character that weren't true, or someone judged your motivations and made a story out of it. Maybe you feel like living on a small campus, that sometimes rumors are going around about you that aren't really true, and you want to try to chase down the rumors and try to get your truth out there, but you don't even know where to start because it's everywhere. Have you been there? Had your name slandered, your image slandered? Jesus understands. Jesus has nothing but sympathy for you when you're here. He hurts with you, not just for you, with you, because he's human and he understands. Okay, what's next? Let's keep going. So we read that night, Jesus went to six different trials from start to finish. Trial one, trial two, trial three, trial four, trial five, trial six. That's a lot of trials. And they keep coming and coming. So lies, rejection, wave after wave for Jesus. And he has to go through all of this alone. No one defending him, okay? Trial after trial after trial. Have you been here? Maybe not like a literal court trial, maybe that, but where wave after wave, bad news after bad news, bad game after bad game, bad day after bad day, where it just keeps coming and coming and coming. And you might wonder, am I ever going to catch a break? Jesus understands. Jesus understands how you're feeling when you're in that moment. Okay, what else? We're still going. We see that in Jesus' first trial, one of the temple guards slap him across the face. In his second trial, he's spit on and violently beat up by a group of men. In his fifth trial, he's ridiculed, mocked, and laughed at. In his sixth trial, he's whipped and slapped again. After his sixth trial, he's flogged, which is like a whipping on steroids, pretty much. The most brutal, harsh, extreme form of whipping. And then at one point, a crown of thorns is lodged down on his head. Wow, okay, so first, a lot of emotional and verbal abuse here, right? He is mocked, ridiculed, made fun of, spit on. But the physical abuse, he's beat up, whipped twice, slapped, trauma to the head. You guys, Jesus understands what it's like to be assaulted. Verbally, emotionally, but also physically. And in a room this size, I'm sure some of you do too. Which completely breaks my heart. Maybe some of you have experienced domestic abuse. Maybe it was something from your childhood, a family member. Ladies, maybe it was an abusive relationship. Men, maybe it was an abusive relationship. And I am so sorry if that has happened to any of you, and it shouldn't have happened. You know, some of us, yeah, have had to endure physical assault, but some of us have experienced emotional assault, a verbal assault. Maybe you have had people gaslight you, or you felt like you were a victim of all kinds of verbal manipulation growing up. Whatever it was, I am so sorry if that has happened to any of you. And again, there's nothing I can say to fix what's happened, and I'm not even trying to. I just want you to know Jesus has scars too. He understands. He's been there. And I don't always understand why God doesn't come in and stop certain situations from happening. Sometimes we just don't have answers to these things. But I want you to know Jesus understands and hurts deeply for you if that has ever happened to you. Okay, we're still going. So we read that Pilate, the Roman governor, brings Jesus in front of a huge crowd. And he puts Jesus in front of the crowd and this other criminal in front of the crowd, a criminal who was actually a criminal. Okay, his name is Barabbas. And Pilate, the Roman governor, he tells the crowd that they can pick a prisoner to go free. And so he gives the crowd the option, pick this guy to go free or pick this guy to go free, Jesus. And the crowd chooses this guy to go free. So Jesus now has not only been rejected by his friends, but he's now been unwanted and rejected by hundreds of people, okay? Now, later that evening, Jesus would be nailed to a cross. And how they would do executions was like this. So they would have the criminal stripped and exposed publicly. Okay, now, for a Jewish man to be publicly without clothes was a severe form of dishonor and shame in the Jewish culture, okay? So crucifixion was not just meant to be a public execution. It was meant to be a public shaming. So Jesus being stripped and exposed to the public like that was also meant to publicly humiliate, shame, and strip him of his dignity. And I also think in a room this size, some of us have maybe felt like our dignity or purity has been violated, taken from us, humiliated, taken advantage of, and you might be feel full of shame for something that someone did to you that they shouldn't have. And again, I am so sorry if this has happened to you, but I want you to know Jesus has been here. He has been deeply vulnerable, exposed, humiliated, and shamed. So he hurts with you and understands what you've been through. So, Jesus, in one night, before he dies, has experienced crippling anxiety, stress, anguish, betrayal, abandonment, rejection, neglect, being falsely accused, slandered, misunderstood, multiple trials, emotional, verbal, and physical assault, humiliation, and shame. What a night full of scars for Jesus. And then we know that Jesus also had other pain in other places of his life. We know Jesus experienced the pain of loss. Jesus lost his earthly dad. He also lost his cousin, who he was very close with. They were born within a matter of months from each other. His cousin gets his head chopped off. Jesus also knew the feeling of being deeply hungry, thirsty, without shelter, without a home. Jesus knows what it's like to fight temptation and to experience things that feel dark and oppressive. He knows what it's like to fight lies from the enemy. Has someone close to you, have you ever lost someone close to you? Have you ever felt tempted by the deceitfulness and allure of sin? Have you ever felt surrounded by something that feels dark and oppressive? Have you ever felt like you were just without basic needs in your life, like food, nourishment, shelter, warmth? Jesus understands. Jesus understands, okay? Let me wrap this up. George Orwell, he was a famous British author from the 20th century, wrote some weird stuff, but he had a good quote. He said this, it'll be up on the screen. He said, "Perhaps one did not want to be loved as much as they wanted to be understood. So it's a great thing to be loved, right? But it is a profound thing to be understood by someone." So to be loved by God is great. I'm a fan, and many of you know that he does. But to be understood by God in my human experience, now that is a whole different thing. That is absolutely profound to be sympathized with by Almighty God. Because here's how the story ends. So that night, Jesus gets killed, and he dies. And then he's dead for 3 days. And then after 3 days, he defeated death, rose from the dead. Many of us know that story. And after that, Jesus went to heaven, and that's where Jesus is right now. But here's the crazy thing, you guys. Jesus is still human. It might be hard to understand, but Jesus is fully God, fully human. So he's still human. So there is a human in heaven running the universe, sympathizing with us. And so as we are in relationship with Jesus, when we ask for help, he is drawn in sympathy for us, absolutely drawn to us. You know, I sometimes think that God is with me, near me, for me when life is going well. But then the more difficult life gets, the more I feel like I'm really alone, like God left or something like that. But can we go back to the verse that Ileana and Alyssa read earlier today? This is what Hebrews says, "This high priest of ours, Jesus, understands our weaknesses, for he faced all the same testings we do, yet he did not sin. So let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we will receive his mercy and we'll find grace to help us when we need it most. Let us come boldly." Why? because Jesus has scars. He understands pain. He gets us. So when you are here, you can go up to that next slide, Quinn. When you are here, me sometimes, like every week, right? Maybe not physical assault, but often. Take heart. Jesus gets you. Jesus understands you. Take heart. He is with you. He is near. He has nothing but mercy for you. This is the character of Christ. I'm going to wrap up with this quote. It'll be up here on the screen. It's a little bit long, but I think it's important. It's what Dane Ortlund said. He said, when a relationship goes sour, when feelings of futility come flooding in, when it feels like life is passing us by, when it seems like our one shot at significance has slipped through our fingers, when we can't sort out our emotions, when that longtime friend lets us down, when a family member betrays us, when we feel deeply misunderstood, when we're laughed at by the impressive, in short, when the fallenness of the world closes in on us and makes us want to throw in the towel, there, right there, we have a friend who knows exactly what such testing feels like, sits close to us, embraces us, with us, solidarity. We are never alone. So our sorrow that feels so isolated and unique has been endured by God in the past and shouldered by Him in the present.